Welcome, Orange County. It's time for the Public Square. Orange County's online campfire, the only place where this community can gather to share ideas, voice their concerns, and otherwise discuss the issues of the day. Brought to you by the Association of California Cities and our sponsor, Waste Management. With the one and only, the illustrious, the verbal, the verbose, the wonderfully, I don't know, he's going to tell you how wonderful he is. Jerry Amante. Hey, Jerry.
Good morning, Paul. Thank you, Paul Roberts, our engineer and man on the street and my partner in crime. Welcome to the first inaugural edition. Is this the maiden voyage, Paul? Is that
this
what we call
is.
It?
And we got to come up with some adjectives to put in front of your name here. What adjectives should we put here? Enlightened? Wizard?
Didn't you have enough in there? I think you exhausted the thesaurus. Anyway, this is the Public Square, and we are glad to welcome you to our first show. And what are we here for, and what is this all about? I think those of you who are listening probably know the Association of California Cities, and if you don't, you will soon rapidly know them. And we're going to have an opportunity this morning to learn a little bit more about them, learn a little bit about some of their affiliates who are here as guests. We're going to have a little bit of talk of what happened last night during the elections. I know you were all up very late. You were up late, weren't you, Roberts?
I was.
And we'll talk a little bit about national, state, and local stuff. And then we're going to have some fun as well. We've got a great producer, Steve Grayshock from 21 Strategies, who's in on this deal and is a great writer and has done some fun stuff. And we have a little segment we're going to do, Paul, called Gaffes and Gadflies, right? If you're in public office, either at the dais or watching, you always find the gadfly and you always have a gaffe. You say
yes.
Something you wish you hadn't said that your mother will talk to you about tomorrow.
Open mic.
So we'll be talking about that a little bit. And so we'll kick off our first show. We're in the public square, and we call it that because just sort of to bring everyone into Paul and I's thought process and what ACCOC is really thinking about what we're doing here. You know, the founders, the people who founded this nation, really thought that it was very important for there to be public discourse. You'll notice in the very First Amendment, there's freedom of speech and freedom of press, and obviously we're in a media now. We're talking to you on radio, streaming.
Online radio.
And we're going to give you an opportunity to be a part of this discourse as the show grows, and so we want you to think of it as the public square, right? The commons in Boston, the kind of place where people would gather to share ideas, talk a little bit about
and where else do they do that, but not in social media and online these days? Where else do people gather to share their concerns or ideas or just shout? Hopefully this won't be a shouting match, but hopefully we'll get this into a discourse, as you said. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, look, there's a little tagline that we have at OC Talk Radio, which is stimulating conversations, which is what I think we're hoping for. You can go to traditional talk radio if you want people to scream at you and cut you off on the phone and make fun of you. That's fine. There's a place for that. But here we want to sort of educate, talk a little bit, learn from one another, have some fun along the way, and talk about important things that really matter to our city, our county, our state, our nation, the world. So that's what we're about. So what's on the show today? Well, first we're going to have an interview. I'm going to get a chance to interview her for a change. Whose name can't be spoken yet. The chief executive officer of the Association of California Cities. We'll find out a little bit about why, who, what, and where this organization is and about her. And then we're going to bring in a brilliant pollster who is an affiliate of the organization who spends his life counting noses, right, before and after events. And we're going to ask him to talk a little bit about what happened last night. And along the way, we'll have a little fun. So so that's what the show is about. We are both nervous and excited, right? This is live, by the way.
That's
for those
right.
of you that are listening on a podcast after the fact, we're actually doing this live. There is no break. There is no cut. We just go through. If I mess up, Paul will edit it before it hits the podcast. But we're doing this live. Want you to know that. So a little bit nervous about the gaffes and mistakes might happen along the way and some of the things I might misspeak. And we're also very excited about this because this is an opportunity that I think everybody who's been involved in the production of the show certainly.
And the reason we do it live is because I think there's value in real. You know, everything is so polished, particularly in politics, and so on message and on point and so distilled and tested and everything else. Are we afraid to just talk to each other again? So we're going to do that without a net.
Yeah. Well, no net. We're like the flying Walenskas of talk.
That's right.
Somewhere strung over Chicago or strung over Orange County over a big tavern.
Niagara Falls.
So how do you find us? Well, obviously you go to octalkradio.net and we're there. You click on, you listen live while we're on. You listen on your pod device, or you listen at your computer, or your office.
iTunes, Stitcher, all sorts of other places where you'll find these podcasts.
Lots of places.
Where people gather to listen to such things.
And you can go to the Association of California Cities website, which is ACCOC, the Association of California Cities, Orange County, ACCOC, the acronym, .org, and find it there as well. And you're going to be able to find it in a lot of other places as time goes on. So with that, I think we're ready to launch into our first guest. So I want to tell you a little bit about her before I bring her on. Lacey Kelly is the Chief Executive Officer of the Association of California Cities. She's a local girl who graduated Cal State University Long Beach, but she has an illustrious career in nonprofit management. She began in the American Water Works Association's California Nevada chapter, led the National Forest Association, was the Executive Director of the League of California Cities Orange County Division, where I met her some years ago. In 2009, Orange County Metro's magazine named her as one of the 20 women to watch, and that was surely predictive of her career here and what she's done with the Association of California Cities. And in 2011, Senator Lou Correa named her as a woman making a difference. And she serves now as a CEO for the ACCOC. It's got several major functions, but mostly it's a collaboration of business, government, academia, and everyone interested in public policy. Welcome, Lacey, to the Public Square.
Thank you, Jerry. I'm so excited.
Well, we're glad that you gave us this opportunity. I want, first of all, to thank, as I'm thanking everyone who had anything to do with the show, to thank you and your board for believing in us, giving us a shot at doing talk radio, streaming talk radio about public policy. We're really excited
about
that.
And the key is streaming, not screaming.
Yeah, it says streaming. Hey, that's good. I like that part. So, Lacey, the Association of California Cities, Orange County, for those that don't know, what is it?
We are a nonprofit association of local governments. Our primary focus is, of course, cities. And we also work with our community partners, so nonprofits, higher education, the business community, anyone that impacts or is a stakeholder in public policy. It's a very entrepreneurial organization. It's a new model or a fresh model for public policy, and we call it the hub for good public policy from the ground up. And what that really means is the people who are actually making decisions, working with their stakeholders and partners to make effective policy solutions on the ground for the public. We all know that local governments are the closest to the people, so this organization, I think, is in many respects a fierce defender of democracy and effective government. So we're trying to do that from the ground up and set an example for all levels of government, frankly.
Well, so now you work constantly with people who are city elected officials, and I know you also work collaboratively with all the people that interface with them, right, in government and
yes.
academia and the like. And so last night you were watching the elections, I'm sure, because you had a number of your members who are going to be affected by whatever happened in those elections and who had those seats. Why were you formed? What was the purpose of forming the organization? Why interface with these people in government?
Well, I think that, first of all, Orange County and all regions in the state are unique. Orange County represents 10% of the state's population and is in a little tiny dot of geography. We're very, very dense. We have some very unique characteristics that are unlike any other region in the state.
In dense, you mean dense in the number of people, not dense.
Thank you for clarifying.
We're brilliant, but
yeah,
there's
yeah.
a lot of us.
Yeah. Hopefully people are still listening after that.
It's like the sign that says slow children. You're
yeah.
like, oh, I'm sorry. This neighborhood is filled with slow children.
Yeah, no, we don't have slow children in our organization. But, so lots of people, small area. So we do have some unique challenges here, but it also has provided us the unique opportunity to get together a lot easier than most other regions of the state and talk public policy and learn from our peers and discuss best practices in public policy and how to serve the public through local government.
And so you're how old?
Oh, I just was going to say, excuse me, isn't that a little personal?
Not you, the ACC.
We are 4 years old.
Okay, and so tell me a little bit about when you formed and what was going on. What was the motivating factor?
Okay, so yeah, there's a lot of myths and facts about our forming. I used to work for the League of California Cities, and we had a local chapter here, the only one that had its local staff, executive director and staff. And I think there's a number of reasons I like to say there's 176 elected officials in Orange County. There's 176 different reasons why we formed, because everybody has their own opinion. But here's what it really boils down to, Jerry, is there's a philosophy in Orange County of how good public policy is formed. And that is that it is informed public policy by stakeholders, those impacted by it, and that the general public at large understand those policy decisions and be able to support them and also engage in them. That is a different model. It's very unique. There's no other organization doing business this way in the state where anybody interested in public policy doesn't just have 3 minutes at the dais, but has an opportunity to have an ongoing dialogue about the best practices and the outcomes and the consequences of policy decisions that our leaders make.
So early on in your formation, if I understand correctly, you invited business people, people who were in academia, others who would not normally sit at the table to make decisions, right? To sit down with these policymakers.
Exactly right. One of the other hallmarks of ACC is that it is a business-friendly organization. Doesn't mean it's run by business at all, by any stretch of the imagination. What it means is that it partners with business and listens to the outcome of policy as it relates to the business community and other sectors. So I think that to do that, you have to sit have them sitting around the table.
What difference does that make? I mean, what's the net result
of
having them
there? Well, I'll tell you, for the public policymakers that really, really care about effective public policy, they want to know what the consequences of their decisions are going to be before it hits the ground. They want to be informed policymakers. And that's really also at the hallmark of why we're formed is folks wanting a mechanism to draw together all the information they needed to make informed policy decisions.
And do the businesses just want to be there because this gives them more than their 3 minutes?
Yeah, you know what is kind of cool is most of the businesses that we deal with, and your upcoming guests can also, you know, speak to this, but they don't expect to drive decisions. They just want to be heard. And I think that's probably the truth for any group that wants a place at the tables. They want to be heard.
I just have a quick thought here. We had Sheriff Hutchins on the other day in one of our other programs here, and she was talking about, I didn't know that the Sheriff's Department has an Orange County Business Council or something like that, I don't know what they call it, where they try and bring businesses in just to hear from what their concerns are and to make them feel involved. And of course, yes, they hope they'll raise money for an extra dog, Bob sniffing dog or something, but is that kind of what this is? You're trying to bring business people into the conversation?
Okay, well, you want me to answer that, Jerry?
Yeah, absolutely.
We're much different and
no, we'll
similar.
Cut to commercial. We
Orange County Business Council is actually a member of our organization, and their CEO, Lucy Dunn, sits on our board of directors, so they definitely have an input into the organization. Many of their members, we have many members that belong to both organizations, so you could say we're doing that at the policy level. We're doing something similar to what OCBC does, but at a policy local government level.
Okay.
Okay, so 4 years ago, you gathered them all at the table. Now, you've had 4 years of experience with this, right? I mean, You've had the opportunity now to have both academic institutions and business people, lay people, community members, and of course, all the elected officials who either serve on your board or come to your programs and the like, interface and work together. What have been, in your view, the key successes of that? Can you give me an example of what in the public policy arena has been accomplished as a result?
Yeah, some great things. First of all, Orange County was the first in this state, led by local leaders, to address pension reform and unfunded pension liability. And in a time period when we needed state reform to address that and it wasn't coming, Orange County leaders got together with labor, with the business community, with staff of cities, with city managers, with electeds, and said, what do we have to do to address this problem? What can we legally do? So they came up with 5 driving principles. Please don't ask me to remember all of them right now. I could probably remember three or four that put their destiny in their own hands as much as they could. And we saw 22, it was probably more now, cities moving towards one or all of those principles in order to address their issues. Later, we came up with some suggestions for the governor. And it was very interesting that 6 months later, he came out with his PEPRA, or his pension reform plan, that almost exactly modeled what that committee had come up with. So we're very, very proud of that. It didn't solve all the problems, but it solved the problems that the cities could handle themselves.
Well, and I think that's a thing to be applauded, because certainly we all now are becoming sensitive to the fact that tensions are an issue. And so to have the governor then adopt something that you're doing locally, this is really about your ground-up stuff, right, what you were talking about earlier.
Absolutely. And can I share another example with
you? Sure. Yeah, no, that's what I should do.
So when the economy was really, you know, having difficulties, one of the things that we did is assembled a Jobs and Economic Development Committee. And what impressed me so much about that committee, which was led by Chris Murray and Robert Ming at one point, is that they invited business to the table and said, you know, hit us hard. We want to know what we're doing that doesn't foster jobs in the economy.
Politicians said hit us hard?
Yeah.
Wow.
Hit us hard.
Wow.
We want to know because we want to make changes. We want to streamline our permit process. We want to get you up and running quicker. We want to know what we can do to create jobs and keep the economy. I think those people on that committee understood that the success of business is the success of cities. It's a full circle. So right. When businesses succeed, the tax base increases, cities have more money than to provide services to their residents. So everybody wins.
So not only on the public policy front locally, though, right? I mean, that's a win for us here. You've got businesses and the political leaders of the community talking to one another and trying to craft decisions for Orange County or for Southern California or whatever region we're talking about in terms of where the policy applies. But you have traveled, I know, to the capitals, right? To Sacramento and back to Washington,
yes.
D.C. And when you go back there, tell me about the impact of being a collaborative with all these other, you know, regional leaders.
Thanks for asking that question. It's something I'm very, very proud of. Also, very, very unique to ACCOC and part of why we were formed. When we go to Sacramento or D.C. to talk to our legislators, we have an impact that's beyond any other organization for one reason and one reason only. We're not going as an interest group of local governments. We're not going as an interest group of higher education. We're not going as an interest group of the building association or the business community. We're going as a full regional community. And that carries weight. When everybody can rally around four or five common points of what is best for this region, it carries a lot of weight. So when we walk in the door and a legislator or a congressman or man or woman can see that you've got a large group of a variety of sectors from one region all on the same page, it's powerful.
So let me be crass. I mean, are they thinking it's powerful because you brought the pockets, right? You brought the business community up there. These are people who write me checks when I want to run for election. So now I'll listen to you because you got the pockets there?
Jerry, you are not going to make me say that, are you?
I'm going to make you be candid.
Go, this Jerry, is
a
go.
Well, look, term limits, that everybody has a different opinion about them, but it is a truth that everybody's always fundraising. So I don't know how much that applies to each individual lawmaker, but it does weigh in. I do think, though, that you have many, many lawmakers that are very, very interested in doing what's right and what will serve their constituents well, and they're thirsting for the on-the-ground information. They really are. We vet that. We're able to bring them details. We're not talking on behalf of our members. Our members are the ones who are talking, and that's what's powerful.
Can I ask one? I had a quick question.
Go.
Are there other Association of California Cities chapters? Are you part of a bigger group and there are more of these around the country?
We have had a number of inquiries to try to start other chapters. That's a possibility. I don't want to speak out of turn, especially now that we just got over with elections. I have yet to look at all the other regions and see who had interest is still in office or who may have came in.
Don't say that. Later in the segment with Adam, I'm going to ask you all kinds of questions about who won the election. So you better have answers.
There is interest. I think that we're a unique brand of public policy.
Yeah.
Very
sounds
unique,
like it.
And so part of the effort is just educating. So right now we're in an education mode. I think you'll start to see over the next couple of years some areas starting up either little committees or actually full chapters in other regions.
That's why I was excited about producing this show and bringing you into OC Talk Radio here, because what you just rattled off in the last 10 minutes, I didn't know. I never heard that there was, that we were a model for pension reform and that we had these kind of meetings and discussions. And I don't know why the local media doesn't choose to cover that or talk about any of that kind of stuff.
We had an article in the newspaper, but,
came and went.
What local media, Mr. Roberts, other than OC Talk Radio, really is doing this kind of stimulating conversation? You know, when Adam comes on in a few minutes, Adam Probowski is going to be our second guest, sitting in the studio waiting to come on the air, just pent up with all kinds of information. conversation.
He is.
We'll talk a little bit
He's
about
getting red faced right now, just waiting to jump in here.
Right, he is. We'll talk a little bit about media in the third largest county in the state, fifth largest in the nation, and you know why does Monterey have its own television station and radio stations, and so does Palm Springs, and Orange County is probably the densest population and the most prolific in terms of economic development. It doesn't have a media market.
That's why we opened this, because we felt there was a void in the marketplace here.
I think that's right. All right, so Lacey, you go up there, and I was being tongue-in-cheek when I said you brought the pockets. But the truth is, the legislators in what we in the business call the building, right, which is the Capitol, we in the business call it the building. The legislators in the building know when you bring them there, right, that it's not just the city elected officials talking to them that they're interfacing with, but it's the people who generate business in their communities, that pay taxes in their communities, that are involved in bringing economic development, that are building homes and
that are
building
educating
water systems.
Their children.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so what is the tenor of the conversation? Do you notice a difference when you were doing that before and after?
Since ACCOC was started?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Last 4 years.
Well, first of all, the meetings are longer. So, if 10 or 15 minutes, you can't get a lot done. When you can meet with a lawmaker for an hour and get into a substantial discussion about economic development, about realignment, which is, for those of you that don't know, the release of prisoners into our local communities from the state level.
Yeah, that's huge. Talk about that someday, I'm sure.
Great topic for a future show. They want to know how those things are impacting their regions, their districts on the ground. And these are the people that can tell them that, and they can tell them from a variety of perspectives, from a variety of sectors.
And you just hit the key word. Talk, conversation, length of time. In a Twitter world, you can't say everything in 140 characters. And this is just my own media bias here. We're all trying to condense things down into as simple a soundbite as we can get to, and yet there's need for a public square, a public discourse, an extended conversation. That's what we found radio or podcasting or whatever you want to call this allows us to do.
I think that's right. And I think it's exciting that we have this opportunity. Thanks to the board for letting us do this. And, of course, Paul, to Talk Radio making it available to us. OC Talk Radio has given us this platform to reach out and to do that, to have this kind of discourse with people about the important public policy issues that are facing them. So tell me now, because I want to do some things that are also interesting on the negative side, the worst experience in the last 4 years trying to get this done.
And you only got 3 minutes to tell us on this.
Okay, the worst experience trying to get this organization going?
Yeah, well, whatever challenge you encountered along the way where you went, this is my biggest disappointment in 4 years doing this. I know you've been wildly successful, so you're going to have to
scratch. Well, try to help local leaders have the information that they need to do their jobs well. And we just went through a disappointment in that people really, in many instances, get good at their jobs as a public leader, and then they're out of office.
Right.
So there is this cycling through of
the
education,
downside of term
collaboration,
limits, right?
Yep. That you have to renew every several years. And that's a challenge because you get to a ramp up. You get to, humming along and being effective, and then you sort of have to regroup. But as you know, we have a training program through UCI in partnership with the UCI that tries to help those new elected officials get up to speed fast. So we're trying to address that.
All right. Now, last question before we head out for a little word from our sponsor from Waste Management. But I want to ask you to tell me a little bit about Cal. You know, I know that the logo for the Association of California Cities has a nickname, and his name is Cal, and he's a bear, right?
Yes.
Tell me about Cal.
Okay, Cal.
Oh, I think
there
he is.
He's getting into the square.
Okay. He woke up.
He is. Cal was born in an Irish pub in the city of Orange.
Oh, I love that.
So he's an Orange County native.
In 2010, yeah, he's an Orange County native. He's 4 years old. He is the mascot of ACCOC and a fierce defender of effective public policy and public service. You could think of him as the Cal is the servant leader of bears.
He is. He is the servant leader, and he lives in a den just off the public square that Paul and I have to keep an eye on because he will roam out here.
From time to time.
Yeah.
Sometimes he just comes over and
he's drinking.
Yeah, he
drinks
drink
at the
now,
font
yeah.
of information
yeah.
we feed him here.
Yeah. Whenever he growls too much, he needs to get a quick drink. So he'll be.
He is Irish, so he's got to drink once in a
while. Absolutely,
and I can say that because I'm Irish. All right.
All right. So now we will give you a little break here from one of our sponsors, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about something that I don't think Cal's going to be all that happy about, but it was an item in the news in a section we are going to lovingly call Gaffes and Gadflies, but right after this.
on the observation deck of the Empire State Building to demonstrate how much material Waste Management recycles. As North America's largest residential recycler, last year alone, Waste Management recycled 12.9 million tons. How much is that? Let's do the math. Carry the six. It's enough to fill this building more than 27 times. With experience like that, we're bound to have a program that can help your business recycle. Talk to Waste Management or visit thinkgreen.com.
Okay, you're jumping the gun there. All right.
I am.
You got to wait for the engineer to cue you. I know you're excited.
Thank you. Yeah, well, it's exciting. You know, first show, we got to get excited. All right. So we want to thank Waste Management and all of our other sponsors for making this possible. So this is Gadflies and Gaffs, or Gaffs and Gadflies, I should say, is an idea of the brilliant mind of Steve Grayshock.
We should get a buzzing sound.
Our co-producer. We get a little, yeah, we'll work on that. Get a sound effect for it. And we'll bring you from time to time the kinds of things we hear from the dais or from the podium at a public meeting or in some other location, anywhere around the world, because some of these are going to be interesting and fun. We'll have fun with it. But Steve Grayshock found a story. He's my co-producer here that we just thought we had to bring to you. So it was ran in the Register not long ago, and it's about the Cal Bear Bandit, Paul. He's wanted in 5 Orange County bank robberies. Apparently, federal agents and local police are looking for this serial bank robber. He's been dubbed the Cal Bear Bandit, and he walks into a bank, advises the teller he wants to make a withdrawal, and then passes a note to them demanding cash and threatens a weapon. And the reason they called him the Cal Bear Bandit is apparently he wears a baseball hat, and it has the California Republic Bear on it, the patch is there, so you know they have to name everybody the Hillside Strangler or something.
Sure,
he's a cow. Now, I happen to know that is
We're working on a nickname for you, Jerry.
That's right not going to sit well with Cal when he finds out about it, and then this morning I screwed up. I made a mistake. I shouldn't have done this, but I threw the Register that had that Cal Bear thing in his den. When he walks by and looks at that, he is not going to be a happy camp. I just know he's going to get ticked about
it. He's not going to be happy.
There he is.
Already
he must have seen it.
Waking up.
Yeah. That's not. Can you imagine this guy walking around wearing a baseball cap and doing this thing? I mean, you know, what are you doing trying to rob our banks? Get our money.
Well, I'm just amazed at how many people. My wife works for a bank, and how many people. I don't think people even realize how many walk in every day and just hand a note and say, I've got a gun or something here.
Yeah, it is amazing. You know, in my prior life, I was a banker. We'll be talking about my prior life a lot, I'm sure, over these shows. But it was like my first gig right in my 20s, and they would move you around from bank to bank. I was in operations at the time, and you'd clean up a bank, and as soon as you'd get it a good inspection, they'd move you to a bigger bank,
right.
A bigger mess. And in one of them, when I rolled up, there were holes all over the brick facade of the bank. And I said, we got to get these holes filled. What are they? Oh, that was from the machine gun fire the last time they had a robbery. That will make you extraordinarily nervous as you come to work.
Yikes.
All right, let's bring in our second guest, Paul. Let's bring in Adam Probalski. I want to tell you a little bit about Adam as he joins us. I know you've heard us refer to him earlier in the show, but Adam Probalski is the CEO of Probalski Research, which is an opinion research and strategy firm. He works for corporate, government, and special interest groups, as well as media clients. And he is, of course, a pollster and a strategic advisor to hundreds of local, county, and statewide initiatives. He has been a key advisor to his firm's clients on public policy, legislation, and business strategy. In a prior life, or not too long ago life, he was a finance commissioner and I think a planning commissioner in Irvine. So he's been on the dais side of government as well, and served on the Policy Committee for Energy and Environment for the United States Chamber of Commerce, among a number of other things he's done. And he's been often in other media. You know, you'll see him in the New York Times, Riverside Press Enterprise, Chicago Sun-Times, lots of print stuff. He's been on KTLA Channel 5's morning show regularly and as a public television regular on the Rio Orange of KOCE. But I think this may be his maiden voyage on streaming talk live radio.
Could be. All right.
Good morning, Adam.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Oh, we're delighted you could come. And especially since I know you were in bed early last night because you had nothing to do on a night of election. Right?
Well, it was all just a lay down here in California. What's the point? You know, right. Come on. What was the turnout last night? Somebody said it was like 25 or 30. It was ridiculously low here in California because there was an assumption that there wasn't anything that was going to shock people, although you're going to tell me shocking things, I'm sure, today here.
Well, there were some surprises, weren't there, Adam?
Absolutely. Some people that we didn't expect to lose, and some things that weren't surprising at all.
So don't you think a lot of people did just stay home because they didn't think that was any real suspense or...
I think the turnout in the midterm elections is always lower than it is when you get to a general election where you're going to have a president on the ballot. And even though you had a gubernatorial race, it wasn't much of a race in California. Neil Kashkari and the governor, that wasn't really a big contest that people were excited about.
So. I don't think it turned out the crowds that they hoped for.
In Orange County, I think we're looking at, 33% maybe?
Yeah, that's embarrassing.
That's embarrassing.
Pretty low.
Yeah, that's embarrassing. And for someone who served in public office, I think people know I was mayor for several terms and an eight-year term on the Tustin City Council here in Orange County. And so when you serve in public office, you really want your public to be engaged in the policy that you're making and to be paying attention to what you're doing and have people show up in an election at one-third of the registered voters. It's just embarrassing. It's sad.
One-third of the registered voters, and of the potential voter pool, how many are registered?
Oh, my God, who knows?
Actually, in Orange County, more than 80%, probably approaching 90% of eligible voters are
really?
Registered.
Okay.
Is that right?
That's impressive.
Yeah, in Orange County, pretty much just people who are here undocumented illegally or felons are the only ones that really aren't registered to vote.
Yeah, maybe some of the felons are, and we don't know. So let's start macro, Mr. Pollster, right?
Yep.
I mean, and let me ask you an embarrassing question. Can I say you are a Republican pollster? I know you've worked on both sides of the aisle and all kinds of issues, but are you generally thought of as someone who's a conservative pollster?
No, I mean, as an individual, I have a personal philosophy. My company doesn't. We are agnostic, so
okay.
So I would just call me a public policy pollster.
And that's why I wanted to get that out, because I want people to recognize this and come with your bias. We're going to talk about our biases a lot, right?
Yes.
I came from a mixed marriage. My mother was a Democrat. My father was a Republican. She was a Kennedy Democrat. My dad was a Nixon Republican.
Wow.
So you grew up with... You had a no public policy in our house, so you got kicked out. Of course, you live in the garage.
Yeah.
But let's start macro. A big wave last night. I mean, a big day for the Republicans across the entire country, and then the wave that was coming from the east seemed to crash at the Rockies. Is that right?
Yeah, I kind of call it a mist.
By the time it was here, it was
California.
A mist.
Exactly. And so we see some impacts of the mist coming across California. But the wave generally stops at the border.
But a big day. I saw this morning an item that I didn't know. How would I know this? But that for the first time in 100 years, Montana has a Republican senator.
Yes.
First time Iowa's ever had a woman who's been elected as a senator.
West Virginia, first time a Republican, I think, in a long time, and
so,
a woman.
Yeah. So big changes. What's that about, Adam? What nationally, what's going on in the electorate's mind that they're making these wholesale giant changes? Is that just we're in year six of President Obama's administration? That's it?
Yeah, I think you can attribute it to all kinds of things, but the bottom line is Obama's unpopular right now, and he hasn't taken on the issues that people care about, and he did take on some of the ones that are extremely unpopular. So if you want to put one thing to it, it's all about Obama and pushing back.
Can I ask you two questions? So this is somebody I view myself as a political person. In other words, I'm more interested than my friends are in the subject, but I'm certainly not in league with all of you guys here who do this for a living. How come in 2010 we loved the guy, and then in 2012 now we hated the guy, and then loved him again and reelected him, now we hate him again here? I mean, is this just the nature of politics? Every 2 years, if we don't get what we want, we're just throw the bums out, and we violently
yes.
react the other way.
Yes, we want what we want, and but also keep in mind that there's some serious, real, substantive policy agenda that he put forward. Not the least of which is the
Obamacare.
Obamacare,
yeah. Yeah.
That really put him on his heels.
Right.
There's a lot of people who do not like it.
Yeah, they're waking up to it now. I mean, when it was aspirational last time in 2012 when he was being reelected, we were talking about the aspiration for universal health care brought mm-hmm. in some fashion by government. Now we've had some experience with it for a couple of years, and people are seeing their premiums change and their doctors change, and they can't get to the hospitals they used to go to. I think now, once you live with the net result, am I wrong, Adam? Now people
no,
are reacting.
But then are they really going to try and, as they say, root and branch, rip this thing out? Because you have given a lot of people policies that they're not going to want to give up now, too. People who couldn't get insurance before and other things. Once you give an entitlement, can you really take it away?
I don't know if it's going to change on a national level, but it's certainly the thing that's one of the things that's seriously impacting how this election turned out.
And so let me take you now from the result last night, and I'll ask this question. I'm going to bring you into this too, Lacey, because, on On the political side, Adam polls in advance for his clients and gives them some sense of what their messaging needs to be or what's resonating with people, and then he watches what happens in the races and he you know, analyzes it as a politician and a political pundit would. But these people that then get elected, right? We've had this wave of Republicans, and now all of a sudden, you know, Mr. McConnell rises to become the leader of the Senate, and Mr. Boehner has added a lot of people to his seats. So same thing happens on local levels. All of a sudden, you may flip a council 3-2 in an opposite direction, and then you have to govern, right? So what,
yes,
what goes through their
happen?
Minds then when right. they have to govern?
This is for me?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it can be difficult shifting from campaigning to governing, and we try to address that. We really try to address any issue that a civic leader at the local level is going to deal with. So, for instance, we're going to have a new elected orientation that gets some seasoned, retired elected officials around the table that talks about how do you move from sort of this hostile environment, really, where you're trying to unseat other people, you're trying to prove you're the best, and it's all often, we saw some very ugly campaigns in Orange County
yes.
this cycle.
Yep.
How do you get past that and try to get to teamwork? Because that's what our organization is about. We're bipartisan, work across the aisle, work with your partners. It's about ideas. We're about collaborative and constructive debate. So disagreement is just fine. How do we get people to operate in that kind of, with that kind of value in a constructive way at the council level?
So on the local level, you're talking about retraining and retooling these new folks to learn how to govern together. But Adam, at the national level, when we're talking about what's going to go on in the Senate and in the House, and with a president who is loath to change the policy directions that he came into office to push, what happens there? How does governance occur there? So you're now in the Republican majority. What do you do in the next 2 years?
Well, there was a contract with America once upon a time when Newt Gingrich and
I remember,
became Speaker, and so hopefully for Republicans there's an agenda, something that's clear and specific,
but
that they can articulate.
But that seemed to be missing this time. I'm a registered Democrat, so I may be the lone voice in here, but that seemed to be missing this cycle. They were running against him and how much they hated his policies, but I didn't hear them saying, and they were even saying this on all the talk shows last night, what is the agenda now that they want to step forward and
look,
put forward?
They used what was effective in the campaign, and running against Obama was much more effective than some sort of proactive, here's what we want to accomplish. But now that they're in power, they need to figure out what it is that they want to put forward.
I was watching Steve Schmidt on MSNBC, and who's the Republican, you know, lone Republican on that channel or whatever, and he said something I thought was interesting. So are they going to step up and take opportunity to lead, or are they going to stick with a policy of now we really going to be emboldened to rip things out and to resist and to block things and really make sure that Obama's administration doesn't accomplish anything? I mean, if they cooperate, don't they sort of give him a victory again here at the moment that they've just sort of crushed him here?
I think they need victories. So even if Obama can take credit for something, there are Republican leadership in both houses need even little victories on a regular basis going forward keeping control.
They got to put some points on the board. If they just simply now really dig in their heels and resist, then they'll get tossed out in 2 years.
Sure.
Yep. So let's move now from the national level, folks, where we've been talking about what's gone on with this wave that stopped at the Rockies and the mist and the mist came over the top. And then
we know why it stops at the Rockies? I know this, we don't have time to go into all these things, but why is California so different resistant to this wave?
What happened here?
Because we have about less than a third of the voters in California are Republicans. Mm-hmm. So
we just don't count.
It's a Democratic state.
Happened, the land of Nixon and Reagan and all these people. How did that happen? That's a question to be debated.
I think people who are on what I will call my side of the aisle, right? I'm a conservative mm-hmm. Republican, Orange County, former elected Republican, member of the party. So there's my disclaimer. I think people on our side of the aisle say this happened when we had Governor Brown 1.0, right? And he decided to give public employee unions the opportunity to negotiate and bargain and become mm-hmm. political animals sort of in the race of who gets elected and who doesn't. And now when you look at California, they dominate what happens politically here. The SEIU, which is the Service Employee Union, the California Teachers Association, the California Trial Lawyers, the groups who contribute heavily to the Democratic cause, raise a lot of money, and they carry a lot of clout. And that's why you see the policies where you see them and how elections are dominated.
So do you think it's been their own fault, though, in some sense? Steve Schmidt said this a while ago, too. I took this to heart. He said that the problem with the Republican Party is that they're all in about purity and witch hunts, and that they've driven to such an extreme position that they've driven out the moderates that used to dominate the party.
Well, and that's the argument from the other side of the aisle, right?
Right.
So you've got these contests. All right, let's switch down local now. Let's get off the state and out of the federal and move down to stuff in Orange County.
Fun stuff.
Where we can get to the fun stuff.
Yeah, what happened?
So in the 34th Senate District, right, this is a seat, Adam, that I think everybody on both sides of the aisle was looking at because it dealt with this two-third majority thing. Tell us about that. What's going on there?
So the goal was to block the Democrats from being able to have a two-thirds majority, which has very limited utility in the legislature, but gives a tiny little bit of power to Republicans who are in the minority.
And so the Democrat running was Jose Solorio, and the Republican was Janet Wynn. So tell us what happens.
So Solorio, a member of the Assembly, former member of the Assembly, and Janet Wynn, a county supervisor, a Republican, and Janet had hard-fought, tough races since she got into politics, running for city council in Garden Grove and then a very difficult run for supervisor, but pulling it off in that case by 3 votes, which was a kind of a fun race and a fun
Three votes it came down to? Oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
Three votes. Don't think your vote doesn't count, those of you at home that are part of the 33%. Get out and vote.
Yeah.
So Janet pulled it off big, and it's a big win for Republicans in the legislature, but it's a great win for Orange County, a Vietnamese Republican woman senator representing Orange County, and
first one,
and someone who's really got a grasp on all the different public policy issues. She represents a district in Central Orange County that has very different concerns and issues than a lot of the rest of the county. These are users of government. If you live in South Orange County, you don't necessarily get a check from government.
You don't use government services.
You don't use
much,
government services. You don't show up to government offices.
Right.
Whereas in Central Orange County, you're a heavy user and you're really involved in getting services from the county.
And an interesting personal story that we'll see if we can get Janet in one day to talk about that. Came over on a boat during the evacuation of Vietnam, and family came over, had nothing. We're on welfare, and graduates from Cal State Long Beach, and she just it's a real success story for
and they've been absolutely waiting so long for, I think, talk about aspirational, for Vietnamese politicians to rise up, because we have the largest expatriate group of Vietnamese in the country here, I think, outside of what, maybe Houston or San Jose or something here. There's a huge population, and they haven't really been electing Vietnamese politicians in Westminster and Garden Grove and all these places.
So let me jump around now a little bit. We'll go to the second supervisorial district, right? We have a terming out John Moorlach, who is our county treasurer and then supervisor. He's leaving office, and we had two seasoned people running for that seat. Let's talk a little bit about the Michelle Steele, Alan Mansour race.
Alan Mansour, state assemblyman, trying to keep himself in elective office, and Michelle Steele on the fairly obscure but very important Board of Equalization in California. And Michelle Steele, a couple years ago, put designs on winning this seat and really had it from that moment. She moved to Orange County from Los Angeles. She put herself in a position where she had the resources to win, and spent a lot of money to get her there, and there was very little question whether she was going to take the seat or not.
Let me take you off subject a minute, out of races for a second, just talk a little broader about these kinds of issues of, we see a change, it seems to me, when I look at this election in terms of the people who are getting elected, even in the Republican side of things, right? I mean, this was a woman-dominated kind of victory last night. If there was a wave in Orange County, it was the Asian wave. We had a lot of Asian women who were elected. Mm-hmm. Talk about that a little bit.
It turns out women are good at math. and they did well last night.
We're going to get some comments about that one. Okay.
Yeah, okay. You're lucky that Lacey didn't throw something at you.
So it's true. We probably won't get to it, but Young Kim won and took out a Democratic incumbent in assembly race in North Orange County, and Michelle Steele. And so, there was certainly a good group of candidates. They happened to be women, and they were successful. And you may try to suggest it was because they were women, and there may be some good reason for that. But we just happened to have a good crop of candidates.
But I've seen that for a while in Orange County. We had a Diane Harkey on before, the former state senator, who now is on the State Board of Equalization, I guess.
Yes.
And we've had Pat Bates, who everybody loves in South Orange County, me included. And we seem to have a crop of women that dominate local politics here, unlike other areas.
Yeah, well, thankfully, they're engaged, and they're key leaders in their communities.
And some of us who are in office have gotten to serve with them, and I can tell you that they bring a perspective to public policy making that you don't get when it's all guys in the room. It's nice to have people who think on multiple levels at one time. All right, so we're gonna break for a message, and when we come back, and just a warning to both of you, my guests, I'm going to take you now out of the political and into the policy. I want to talk a little bit about, all right, these people have won at whatever level we've been talking about in these races and others, and you can bring other races up if you think they're interesting to the question that we're going to raise. But be thinking on this break as we do these spots that we're going to do for our sponsors about what does that mean now in terms of governance. Lacey, you're about public policy, and now these people are in office, so let's talk a little bit about what that means, and then let's look forward to 2016 and beyond if we can. All right, and so stand by for this. This is Jerry Monte again. Just want to tell you how excited we are about having a HERO, the HERO program, as one of our sponsors. They are the leading residential energy efficiency company. They make energy efficiency and water conservation upgrades for your home affordable. So you get things like solar and heating and cooling and windows and roof and other water conservation tools. And you get lower utility bills with no upfront costs for the homeowners. And they have a way for you to be engaged in that. Currently, there are over 21 Orange County jurisdictions that have the HERO program. And if you want to know more about it, to check availability in your area or to see if you qualify, please check with the HERO program. That's HERO program.com. HERO program, an opportunity for you to have efficiency with very little cost.
Okay, back to our show. And I think you said qualify instead of qualify, but
qualify.
I think that's
the first gaffe. Thank you, Mr. Engineer, for pointing it out to everyone who was listening.
In case they miss that, you can replay that again.
100,000 people qualify listening to this maiden voyage.
Coined a new word.
Qualify. All right, let me ask you to qualify your comments now about governance. All right, so you can pick any race you want. You can talk about any one of them if you want to use it as a platform to talk about it. But I want to get both the political pundit and politician, the ground game guy who helps these people get elected's view, and then the public policy view, Lacey, from somebody who's a nonprofit professional that works to try to educate them to do good public policy, different perspectives about the newly elected, right? Even if they've been in other offices before, they're newly elected to this office, they have new challenges, they have things they told people, Adam, that they wanted to do, but now they actually have to get stuff done, and guess what? There's bureaucracies, and there's other political people. Talk to me about the process, and I'll start with the political. What happens?
I'll tell you, there's an interesting one that's come up in the city of Irvine, where there's a significant shift. Not just the fact that the majority stayed the same in Irvine, you've got a conservative kind of pro-business majority, but the campaign will inform what happens now. And the Larry Agron tried to send a message to Irvine and tell Irvine residents that Irvine was bad and things were really on a wrong track. And now you have a governing majority who has to address that and explain that was just politics and Agron was wrong and remember how great Irvine is. So it's kind of interesting that the campaign is really something that has to still be addressed because Agron did such a good job of convincing people things were bad. And you've got to overcome that in this campaign, in this governing side of what comes after the election.
And you have to overcome it with some of the people who were serving with him or were supported by him right at that same day. So you got to work with these people who are not exactly friendly to you.
Sure. Yeah. Just one of them now, turns out.
And Lacey, from the public policy side now, what do you say to that person who comes to you and says, okay, I want to get a little education, I want to drink from the font like Cal does, he comes over here and there he is again.
There he goes again.
He does it on cue. He's so brilliant. What a smart bear.
He's interested in public policy.
He is. So what do you say to them when they ask that tough question? What do I do now to get along with my colleagues that I was just, beating the heck out of during the election and I got to govern with them?
It depends on what motivates each particular leader. And so when we talk about what Adam was just talking about, the outcome of some of these elections in some of the cities, without naming any, you know, we saw some cities get likely more polarized in the future. Last night, we saw some cities that are going to probably be more aligned. And what that really means for policy is that when you have councils that are a little more aligned, not that they all, every council person thinks the same way, what you see is they're able to focus on the challenges of local government instead of just utilizing their dais to fight political battles.
Right.
So local government still has huge issues to come to the table on. We continue to fight for our local funds being taken away by other layers of government, especially our state. We continue to look at land use decision making being taken away from local governments. Cities, as they work to house their communities, to provide the services to their communities, have a broad range of sometimes negative reaction from their own public. So cities want to engage, at least our leaders currently want to engage their publics in what they're doing at a more effective level. We have tons of energy and environment issues. Energy environment laws have been the norm in Sacramento over the last several years, and we have to start addressing how we're going to move towards compliance. These are all things that every city has in common. And it's really hard for city leaders to focus on solving those problems when they're focused on fighting each other on the dais.
Yeah, when you're throwing mud back and forth, you can't do much for the public. So that's,
and can
that's
I just
point.
Raise another interesting thing that observation I've seen? I've heard people talk about this. It seems like local politics, as ugly as it can get, at the end of the day, somebody's got to fix the potholes. You know, it seems like there's a push that makes them have to work together in a way that national politicians, I don't know, don't seem to have to do.
Well, it's the only form of government where you can see your local elected officials in their daily lives, potentially meet them in the grocery store.
Not potentially. You know? They meet you in the grocery store.
And they'll let you know, right?
You know.
Jerry, you know this.
Oh,
they'll let
God,
you know,
yeah.
I don't like that my traffic light isn't working. The stop sign blew down in the wind last night.
Right.
There's a tree in the middle of our road, and why isn't it fixed yesterday? So, you know, there's a level of accountability in local government that's impressive, and it's at like no other level of government.
So isn't that the hope, then, that maybe policy springs from the ground up, that it seems like at the while we're paralyzed at a national level, it seems like that perhaps the local, we look to local politicians and cities and mayors and stuff.
And now, Mr. Roberts, there you are stealing my thunder and my clothes about what we're all about. You know, Lacey talks about this as the hub of public policy, but I think that's right, right? I mean, I think if we're going to turn this around so that we have less dysfunctional government at the state and the federal level, there has to be some laboratory where you show how cooperation works, and it really can only be at the local level, where the people are closer to you and are holding you accountable to do some stuff. There is no other real hope. Oh, you agree with that, Adam?
Sure.
Oh, sure.
I agree with it. That's why we were formed.
All right. We're going to take one more break, bring you one more message. When we come back, we will wrap this maiden voyage on OC Talk Radio, Stimulating Conversation. So we are sponsored by West Coast Arborist. Now, I was the mayor of Tustin, Paul. You know where that is.
Yes.
That's the city of trees, right? That's our moniker.
I didn't know that.
We're the city of trees. More trees in Tustin per capita than any other Orange County.
Even like, because I picture like Lake Forest where they planted those all around the lakes and stuff.
Neither a lake nor a forest. No, it's like grape nuts. No, my friends in Lake Forest will know I'm teasing. But West Coast Arborist is one of our sponsors. They're really proud to sponsor us, and we're proud to have them. They set the gold standard, really, for superior tree care. They are the leading provider of tree maintenance and inventory services throughout Orange County and the state of California. They specialize in ensuring that our public agencies and municipalities, like the City of Trees and Tustin, have thriving, well-maintained, and safe urban forests. I bet you didn't even know we had urban forests.
No.
But we do. If you want more information about cooperative purchasing or bidding opportunities or a list of services from the West Coast Arborist, please check their website at WCAINC.com or call them at 714-991-1900. West Coast Arborist, 714-991-1900.
I'm going to call them because I think I got a tree that needs help in my house here.
They can help you.
All right.
All right, Paul. So here we are. Thank you to Lacey and to Adam. We have made it through the nerves.
Wow.
We only had one gaffe with my qualifier.
Yeah, got a little testy there when I challenged some Republican principles, but
yeah,
that's okay.
No, that's
right.
Okay. We'll get testy with one another from time to time. We're a purple organization, so you know we like
that's
all
right.
sides.
Well,
sides.
I really like what you say there. Where we completely agree is I think that at the ground level, public policy needs. This is the experiment. This is a place where we can figure stuff out at cities, and if we can make it work here, we can make it work everywhere.
And I think that's right, and that's our goal. Look, our parting shot, I guess, as we leave the air today in our first show, is to say that the most important thing for us is to do ground up public policy and to be a resource for our servant leaders. We hope that people that get engaged with the Association of California Cities end up governing better because of that ability. Lacey, did I say that right?
Yes, you did. And I want to do a plug on just that, engaging our local leaders and also the public. We would like to invite everybody to our event next Thursday, November 13th at 6 o'clock at night at the Costa Mesa Hilton, where we will have political commentator and columnist for the Sacramento Bee and other publications, Dan Walters.
And Dan's amazing.
I would love to be there, and I'd love to capture some little sound bites, and maybe we can play him on the next show here.
Absolutely. And he will be looking at the elections and giving his prognostication.
He's pretty sharp. I've read his columns before, and he's been around, seems like, forever or something.
He's very good, and he's fun to read, and he always has something good to say, so that'll be a great program.
People
November
13th. At the Costa Mesa Hilton, they can sign up through our website.
At
accoc.org.
accoc.org.
Includes dinner.
Also the place where you can find this show, as well as on octalkradio.net. Did I get that right?
You did.
Engineer? All
We're
right.
A network.
My thanks to Adam Probulski from Probulski Research. Thank you for being here, Adam, on our maiden voyage. We will have you
Thank
back
you.
Often. And to you, Lacey, for all that you've done. Thank the board for us for being on the air.
Thank
Paul,
you, host Jerry.
And everyone here at OC Talk Radio, and all of our sponsors, the Hero Program, West Coast Arborist, and Waste Management. Thank you all. This is Jerry Monte saying goodbye, and we will see you next week right here in the public square.
You've been listening to the Public Square, Orange County's online community, online campfire, the only place where this community can gather to share ideas, voice their concerns, and otherwise discuss the issues of the day. Brought to you by the Association of California Cities, Waste Management, and other great sponsors, including this station, octalkradio.net, Orange County's only community radio station.